Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mike.
We're going to talk today about mind-body therapies. There are many mind-body treatments. The concept of what we might call mindfulness is generally used to delay or prevent the recurrence of major depression, to deal with stress, maybe even of benefit to those who are in pain, and even for those who are using high doses of opioids to treat pain. Mind-body treatments can help reduce the dependence on opioids. These mind-body-based stress reduction modalities can involve relaxation techniques, hypnosis, meditation designed to enhance a person's ability to relax, cope with stress, help manage pain, etc. In one now a bit old meta-analysis containing 7 randomized controlled trials, patients with lower back pain, these mind-body modalities, modestly improved pain intensity and physical functioning. But Mark has found, in his inevitable way, a larger study that was recently published in 2019 that sheds a bit more light on the effect of these mind-body therapies. It was published in JAMA Internal Medicine, again, electronic version, so I'm not going to read you the number, but it attempts to answer the question, are mind-body therapies, including meditation, hypnosis, relaxation, are they effective to decrease pain or affect opioid use in patients with acute or chronic pain? Mark, should these be modalities we should be looking more closely at?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I just want to add, you said I found it, and actually Alan Shaughnessy found it. And there are 6 of us that look every month at over 100 journals, and we identify about 25 studies that should change practice or potential to change practice in primary care that we call POEMS. And so if you're interested in getting all of them, you can go to essentialevidenceplus.com and learn more about that, and as well as our online reference. Alan found the study. I got to give Alan credit. Okay. We've been doing this for over 20 years. So these researchers, they searched 6 databases for English language articles on mind-body therapies to decrease pain or affect opioid use in patients with acute or chronic pain. They looked all over the place at other bibliographies and websites. Review methods were sound. They ended up identifying 60 studies with about 6,400 participants. So not large, an average size, about 100 patients, so not huge. They evaluated mind-body approaches on procedural pain, pain due to a burn or cancer, and general you know, chronic pain. They assessed most studies as being low risk of bias. What they found was pain intensity was reduced to a moderate to large amount with either cognitive behavioral therapy, meditation or mindfulness, hypnosis, and therapeutic suggestion. The latter involves suggestions to change thoughts, emotions, or sensations without using hypnosis. I'm not quite sure how to do that in practice. I'd have to learn more about that. But, you know, it was an impressive benefit. Meditation, CBT, and hypnosis also decreased opioid-related outcomes like misuse, opioid craving, and time to opioid cessation. So patients were able to stop using opioids faster with acute pain. There was a lot of heterogeneity between the studies regarding the size of the effect. There was a suggestion of publication bias for studies of meditation and therapeutic suggestion, which means that small negative trials, let's say someone did a study with 30 patients of meditation and found no effect, those were less likely to, or it appears that some of those were unpublished. So the estimate of the benefit of meditation and therapeutic suggestion may be overestimating that benefit because of this publication bias. So bottom line, certainly cognitive behavioral therapy and hypnosis, possibly meditation and therapeutic suggestion can help improve chronic pain conditions and acute pain, as well as reduce the need for opioids. So, you know, I think that's actually a pretty important outcome, things we should, again, be thinking about more often for our patients who have painful conditions.
My problem in my practice is twofold. One, there's no question that of all the things you've mentioned, a cognitive behavioral therapy has been extremely well studied. And for many conditions, it's a no-brainer. It is as good or better in many studies for depression and anxiety, et cetera. The problem for me is that it's really hard to find a therapist in the community who is skilled and willing to take any kind of insurance for CBT. The extension of that is that if I wanted to send someone for meditation or hypnosis or any of the things that we've been talking about, almost always it's not covered by their insurance. It's moderately expensive because these clinicians and providers need to be reimbursed. And it's hard to know who's legitimate and who's not.
I don't have a great answer for you. I mean, and we run into the same problem. I'm in a safety net clinic and, you know, I can't find anybody to do this. There have been trials, and I have not made any attempt to train myself in this, I'll admit, and I probably should. But there are studies, I think, out of the UK where primary care physicians, GPs, were trained in the basics of cognitive behavioral therapy and successfully were able to deliver it in a practice setting. There are apps, there are books, there are ways to do it, but it's tough. I mean, it's much, much easier, obviously, to just pull out the prescription pad, and it requires engagement by the patient. And particularly in setting where I practice, you know, I have homeless patients. You know, focusing on mindfulness practice is probably not up there on their, right. They're more worried about their next meal. And it's a challenge. And these patients often in my clinic, you know, chronic pain is very common. And opioid use, although we don't prescribe opioids in our clinic, many of them have a history of that problem. So yeah, there's no easy answer. I think at a policy level, we need to push for, you know, better coverage of these very effective things. You'd think that with the federal government's focus on reducing opioid use, they'd be more willing to put resources into this kind of therapy. But, you know, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. And sort of a corollary of that is, as we're training new psychologists and psychiatrists and clinical social workers and the like, you know, it would seem to me, given the enormous evidence around CBT, and you know that it's so easy that you could even train primary care doctors to do it, that should be it should be a go-to therapy that is just something that everybody who graduates with mental health training should know how to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we do, you know, obviously primary care physicians get a lot of training in behavioral health other than, I guess, Lady Gaga a few days ago. And there was an editorial in the New York Times, the quote was, primary care physicians prescribe most of the antidepressants in the country, yet have no training in psychology or behavioral medicine. I was just, you know, appalled by the fact that they could print crap like that. But anyway, you know, we in primary care, we do care for most patients with depression. It's a subset, 20% or so, that are cared for by psychiatrists. So yeah, I think you're right. It ought to be part of the training program. And we have to figure out a way to make it, you know, financially viable in a practice and to deliver it in, you know, 15-minute increments once a week for 6 weeks. And so we can get paid to do that important work.
Thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.